The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
You're listening to UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to Truth Transforms. Join in for spiritually enlightening discussion and the practical application of new thought principles. Here's your host, Reverend Galen McDowell.
Welcome to Truth Transforms. I'm your host, Galen McDowell, and I am the executive minister, senior assistant minister, and the director of the Johnny Coleman Institute at Christ Universal Temple, where the Reverend Dr. Derrick B. Wells is the senior minister and the Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman is the founder. Today, I have the guest of guests, and we're going to talk about success, how to produce wealth, and most importantly, how to live a healthy, happy, and prosperous life. So today, my guest is Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, The Wealth Choice, What Makes the Great Great, and a person who has taught millions of people around the world how to live a better life. And I'm just honored to have you on my show again. How are you doing, Dr. Kimbrough?
Reverend G. Mack, I am doing fine, man. Thanks for having me. You could have selected anybody, so I'm honored to be on the show.
Well, I appreciate it. So, you know, I want to get right into it so I can ask my questions before we open the floor up for questions. And as I was contemplating this interview this morning after my meditation time, something came to me that was really interesting, and I would love for you to talk about it before we actually get into some of the principles that you teach in your books and in, you know, and in your classes, workshops, and seminars. And what I thought about was I can remember meeting you as a, you know, a young man in my 20s, or, you know, I think when I met you, I was literally 20 or 21.
Oh, wow. And,
believe it or not. Yeah, it was at a men. I was 21 when I met you at a Men Expressing Christ conference. And came and you had spoke for the conference, and then you spoke that Father's Day. That's what that was the first time I ever met you. And that was 1994.
Father's Day, difference between a man and a boy.
The difference between a man and a boy. And I still have that video on VHS. I had it transferred to DVD, but I still actually have it in a crawl space, because to me, that was the lesson as a young man. Hearing that lesson, the difference between a man and a boy, was a game changer for me.
We had fun, man.
You know, back then it seemed like you were here all the time.
Johnny and Helen, man, they scooped me up, man. Yes, indeedy. So we had some fun. I got to come back, man.
Without a doubt. I know things have slowed up because of the pandemic, but we definitely have to make that happen. So that's a conversation that I'm more than willing to have. So,
but this is the third pandemic that I've been through.
Wow.
This is the third. The first, when I got my polio shot. I mean, I was about 4 years old when, you know, my mother, you know, marched me and my brother down to the Board of Health. And I can remember, okay, here I am 71, but I can remember the long white coats and hearing kids screaming, because that vaccine was really a vaccine. You look at my left arm and I got the living proof. I got my tattoo. So that was my first pandemic. The second pandemic was tuberculosis. And this time, the New Jersey Board of Health gave parents a choice. Either you can bring your child in to be vaccinated, or your child can be vaccinated at school with the school nurses. And so my parents opted out. No, he doesn't need him. He'll get his in school. And I remember the teacher following names, you know, accompany the nurse. And back then, the school nurse really looked like a nurse, with the heavy starch hat, the heavy starch hat and the white stockings and this, that, and everything. And I got it there. And then number three, here we are now. But this is just the most recent pandemic. I mean, you go back to the 1970s, and though we didn't know it in the United States, the rest of the world knew it, specifically Africa. When you got, you know, Dr. William Fauci, who made a decision, a conscious decision, that he was going to bring a halt to smallpox in Africa. Uh-huh. And for that, he got the highest honor that you can get in public health and the White House. Obama gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom for what he did. Ended and some of the tactics that Urban Health uses today, he was the one that discovered it, and he really put a dent in smallpox. But smallpox is still running rampant. I don't want to say running rampant. I don't want to do a value judgment, Reverend GMAC. But for those who say they don't want to get vaccinated, and I'm not saying, listen, you do whatever you want to do. All healing is spiritual. You hear me, listeners on the phone, wherever you are? All healing is spiritual. You can go to a 4th of July party and you have a little 3-4-year-old child that falls in the pool. You can pray for his or her deliverance. You can pray for his or her rescue. That's spiritual. Or you can jump in the water and pull him up to safety. That's spiritual also. So it's not either all. All healing is spiritual. I mean, it's the Last Supper. What did Jesus say? Do this in remembrance of me. Well, do what, Jesus? Love. Love in remembrance of me. So all healing is spiritual, but now we live in a society that's one or the other. No, I'm sorry. I'm not. You don't know. You don't even have the thinking to interpret what they mean. If you're called on to be one of the 40 authors in the Bible, one of the 66 books, do you know where your thinking must be? Do you?
Yeah.
And here he is. He's on a boat in the middle of the ocean, and a storm hits. And these guys that he had mentored and coached and poured into and taught woke him up in the middle of the night while he was sleeping. And what did he say? What did Jesus say? Jesus said, peace, be still. It doesn't mean, okay, peace, calm the waves, peace, be still, wind. It doesn't mean that. He was speaking to his disciples. How many more miracles must you see before you believe? You were with me when I raised Lazarus. You were standing right next to me when I turned that water into wine. You were right there in the audience when that centurion came to me. I believe you, and I'm a Roman centurion, but if you say the word, you'll heal my slave. How many more miracles must I perform? And so Jesus, they saw a side of Jesus that they never saw before. Jesus was saying, this is no time for peace. I'm not being nice. I'm sorry. Enough is enough. Peace, get out of here, peace. I don't need you today, peace. Now sit down and be still. You're going to hear this.
Yes, yes, absolutely,
that's
absolutely
powerful. So you're going to be one of the ones that translate it. Well, if you're thinking at that level, you know that all healing is spiritual. You don't need the elixir. You don't need the anecdote because you have solved the problem mentally. Now, Reverend GMAC, you know this better than I. That's where we are going. That's where we should be in our development. There's no disease. There's no dis-ease, lack of ease. There's no such thing as a heart attack, just a troubled heart. That's where our thinking should be. And the only way that'll occur is if you work out your salvation every day. You had a head start this morning. You said you're going to start the day with your prayer and devotion. Well, we need to do that constantly and over and over and over because we've got to raise our level of vision.
Yeah, absolutely,
there's so many
absolutely.
Gaps that we so, have got to close. Adam, where have you been? I've been hiding. Why are you hiding, Adam? I was afraid. Adam, who taught you fear? And that was the beginning of the end. That was the beginning of the end of all thought. And that was the start of the world.
Yes.
So,
yes.
When you know, you read Revelation, and it says the end of the world. I'll be with you to the end of the world. I mean, that's where we should be in our thinking. We should fall on our knees right now and hope and pray for the end of the world. I can't wait, Reverend GMAC, for the end of the world to get here. Now, that doesn't mean United States and China, United States and Russia going to enter in a nuclear holocaust and everybody be bombed to oblivion, whatever. It doesn't mean that. Well, what is the world today? The world is toxic. The world is so full of so many nonsense and backbiting, people all up in your face and mass shootings and everything. I can't wait for the end of that nonsense. What's going to overtake it? Everybody lining interject. Up.
You know, one of the things that I was talking with, I know someone, you also know Dr., the Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith.
And oh, yeah.
And he had mentioned that he said, he said there's a difference between the earth and the world. The earth is a planet.
Yep.
The world is a behavior of human consciousness. He said, I'm not praying for the world to be saved, the world that has a mentality that functions a certain kind of way. He said that world needs to end so the new world can come forth. But the new world is not talking about a new planet. It's talking about a new psychology. Yeah. It's talking about a new spirituality. It's talking about a new collective consciousness and humanity. Yeah. And as we shape and form the world by our thinking, we can understand that when Jesus says, I've overcome the world, I've overcome the limited collective human consciousness that is producing these results that we see and we don't like. And I think that this is really important for metaphysical thinkers, and I know I throw the word metaphysical around a lot because that's what I do. Mm-hmm. For us to understand what we're working on and why we're working on it. One of the things I want to interject because I didn't want to finish this the statement of what came to me this morning, Dr. Kimbrough, because I do want to make sure I get this out so people can have an opportunity to call in and ask you questions. What came to me earlier this morning was many people who teach success, they don't all, not everybody has a head start. And I remember you talking about how you didn't have a head start, especially when you were writing your first book and the challenges. Mm-hmm. And the thought came to me, not only did you not have a silver spoon in your mouth talking about wealth, you had to earn it, but you also probably didn't have the spoon, let alone the silver spoon in your mouth. And literally, I laughed.
Yeah.
Because I said,
he
had to prove what he taught. Could you talk a little bit about
I had to become that
having
individual.
To prove what you taught?
Yeah.
So what was it like being the person who wrote Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, and then had to go apply it to show people that it really worked? How did that work for you?
Yeah, and Reverend G. Mack, that book is 30 years old, man, 1991, and here we are actually going on 32. And before I answer the question, I'm working on a revised edition. I got an email and a couple of phone calls, Zoom calls with my editor and one of the VPs with Random House. And to show you that, even low and small thinking can raise its ugly head anytime, because as the 30th year was approaching, me and the Napoleon Hill Foundation said, man, they need to have an anniversary issue. What's taking them so long? Blah, blah, blah. And so we didn't hear from them for almost a year. And then, of course, this Penguin Random House, we didn't hear from them until that Zoom call. And they said, no, we don't want an anniversary edition. If you want an anniversary edition, all you need is get somebody to write a new forward, and we'll go ahead and stamp on the cover of the book, anniversary edition, but we don't want that. And me, collectively, and the Napoleon Hill Foundation, said, what do you want? I said, no, we want a revised edition, which is a rewrite of 20% of the book and 5 new examples and new tools, and we will introduce it at the end of this year, 2022. Or the beginning of 2023 in hardback. And so that's what I'm working on now. And I shared some names, folks that I'm that I'm going after and the like. But you got to become that individual. And these tools work. And it's all mindset, heart set, soul set, health set. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed from Stephen Covey to Napoleon Hill to Orson Swett Marden to Ralph Waldo Emerson. Nothing had Henry David Thoreau. Nothing has changed. Simon Sinek, Daniel Pink. Nothing has changed. So it's just the application of these tools and principles that have changed. So anybody can use them. Anybody can use them to advance their life.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. So when I was going through your book, The Wealth Choice, The Secrets of Success for Black Millionaires, in the book, you have seven laws of wealth. How did you come up with, and I'm going to read the seven laws of wealth if you don't mind before I ask the question.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
It was, the first one was decision, resolve now that you will not be poor. The first law was wealth of knowledge, the most powerful economic weapon. Am I reading this right? Okay. Am I reading it right? Okay. Decision,
no,
resolve
go,
now that you will not be poor.
Go to the next to last page, and there are the seven principles.
Yeah, content. The second law, decision, resolve yourself that you will not be poor. The haves and the have-nots, the differences that make the differences. Believe in thyself when no one else will. To thine own self be true. Find your unique gifts. How may I serve thee? The road not taken. Make thy money grow. So how did you develop these seven laws of wealth?
Well, they were based on the research that I had. That's a seven-year study. And Reverend G. Mack, I used three primary tools, research tools. Number one, I used the survey. And in the survey, I asked them black millionaires 118 questions. Now, I didn't know at the advance of this book, I didn't even know how many black millionaires in the United States until I had a presentation with the Federal Reserve. When Tom Stanley wrote The Millionaire Next Door, he used three primary sources of data. He used IRS, Census Bureau, and U.S. Trust Survey data. And when I was in my second year of research, I went down to the Census Bureau and I asked them, I said, how many black millionaires? And they were unsure. They said, but we know who has the data. And I said, who has the data? They said the Federal Reserve. And it just so happened, Reverend G. Mack, 60 days after that conference with the Census Bureau, I had a presentation at the Federal Reserve Board here in Atlanta. And they asked me what I was working on. And I said, funny you should ask. You talk about, no, it's not coincidental. It's manifestation. Mm-hmm. And so they told me, they said, there's two ways you can go about this. You got about 112,000 families with a net worth of $1 million or more, or you have 35,000 individuals with a net worth with $1 million in assets. And I said, I wanted the individuals. Now, people will say, oh, man, that number is so low, blah, blah, blah. Reverend G. Mack, the day that Think and Grow Rich was published, Census Bureau published their annual data on ethnic startups. And they broke it down by East Indian, Jewish Americans, Irish Americans, Polish Americans, African Americans, Native Americans. 1991, no group had more startups. For every 1,000 East Indians, 97 had their own business.
Wow.
And I'm not going to give you the data. This was 91. 97 out of 1,000 East Indians had their own business. Jewish Americans, 79 out of every 1,000 had their own business. And you go on and on and on when it came to African Americans. This will blow you away. Census Bureau data. And I got the citation. For every 1,000 African Americans in 1991, only 14 had their own business. And that was the problem.
Yeah.
And that was the problem. So say, well, do you think Think and Grow Rich Black Choice made an impact? Yes, I would say it made an impact. So
yes,
that was number one. I had this survey and I asked them 118 questions. Now, Reverend G. Mack, some of the questions were, I didn't want to know any proprietary information, but they shared proprietary information because the survey was divided into four sections. The second section was all about their finances. Would you have a problem paying an unexpected $5,000 bill? who balances the checkbook in your family. How many times is the checkbook being balanced, this, that, and everything, blah, blah, blah. So I asked them 118 questions. Number two, I held six focus groups around the country. Three were in Atlanta, one was in Omaha, one was in Washington, D.C., and one was just black females out in Las Vegas. And then last but not least, I had 60 interviews, face-to-face interviews. Now, you heard me say it before. I made the, you know, the conscious decision that I didn't want any athletes or any entertainers. Uh-huh. And folks asked me, I said, well, because we're overrepresented, we were preponderant in that particular area. But that did not obviate the fact that there were some entertainers I had to interview just because of the platform and because of the wealth. So I had to interview Steve Harvey. I had to interview Tyler Perry. I had to interview Damon John. I interviewed Tyrese Gibson. I cut it off. The last interview, and I was just about to interview him before my editor said, enough, no more, and that was Common because he had done a few entrepreneurial endeavors and the like. So there you are, and based on that amalgam, those three key areas, those three survey tools, I've wrapped my mind around, you know, how they interact with their own. I wasn't, you know, enamored with how they interact with me, but in those focus groups, I got a chance to see how they interact in their peer group. Mm-hmm. And in the peer group, they're low key, no bling bling, no flossing, absolutely positively GMAC, absolutely positively, no look at me, no designer threads, no driving in with something low and long, none of that. Every one of them off the rack, off the shelf. What you see is what you get. Driving in old beat up pickup trucks, old blah, 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 wearing jeans, this, that, and everything. And it is only when they have galas among their peer group will they break out the threads and the bling bling. But they don't do it. They don't flaunt it in front of any and everybody else. And that's one of the key indicators. At least I abide by. If they look wealthy, they're probably not.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting with Think and Grow Rich, and we're probably about 4 minutes from the break. Time has already flew by, believe it or not. One of the things that I would love, and obviously, you know, I'm not in the Chicago public school system, but I'm a big believer that Think and Grow Rich, a black choice, should be taught in urban areas, in school.
Oh yes.
You know when
so
I was
John Rogers of Ariel was doing that.
I didn't know
he
that.
Had. I don't mean to cut you off, but he had a little mentorship program with one of the urban schools near his office or near his home, and I think he was like speaking on weekends or once a month or twice a month, and he was using the book. But go ahead.
No, I was just saying from the standpoint of. In that book, you talk a lot. First of all, you use African-American examples, and people many times don't know about African-American success unless it's a, you know, a singer, a rapper, an actor. You know, many times we don't even know about the business person, you know, who actually has more wealth that can write checks for the athletes and the entertainers. But the reason why I'm sharing that is because the principles that are shared in that book about how to use your imagination, you know, how to be creative, you know, persistence, having faith in your dream and your goals. Those are things that many times aren't taught. When I was in grammar school, I was being taught about the Alamo, which wasn't going to help me, help my community, or help my family. But I had to learn about things that really didn't impact my life. And it's just amazing to me that information like yours, that, you know, you're an educator by trade. You know, are you still at Clark Atlanta? Are you? Because I didn't even ask you that.
Yep.
You know, so you're an educator by trade, and yet we put books in people's hands, our children's hands, who, if they learn it at that age, could transform the world. But instead, they're learning about the Alamo. And they're learning about throwing tea into a river or a lake,
Yeah.
Where they're part of communities that just don't work. And, you know, as you know, things are happening in Atlanta now, like they happen in the streets of Chicago and some of the poorer areas.
Yeah.
People need hope, and they need to know that it's possible, and they need to know that it's the ability to overcome odds is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a minute left, so I'm going to ask you before to pick up when we come back. But part of why I believe your work is so important is because you focused so much on making sure that our youth get it, because they'll transform it. Like I said before, being a young man, 20, almost 21, 22. I was 21 when I met you, not 22. Going on 22, hearing the difference between a man and a boy, and then you connecting that to success, to prosperity, to what it means to be a man who provides, what it means to be a man who handles his business, was really important. And these are messages that we have to get to our youth. And it's important that they understand that they can think and grow rich. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with mind. Or as Johnny Coleman used to say, I am the thinker who thinks the thought that makes the thing. And so we're about 30 seconds from our break. So let me just, prep that when we come back, if you want to call in and ask a question, ask Dr. Kimbrough a question about success, about wealth building, about prosperity, please do. You can call in at 816-251-3555, 816-251-3555. We'll be right back with Truth Transforms.
Thanks for joining us. This is UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome back to Truth Transforms with your host, Reverend Galen McDowell.
Welcome back to Truth Transforms. Yet again, before we get back to the interview, I just want to do a couple of quick commercials for Christ Universal Temple. I want to remind you that you can watch our Sunday live stream every Sunday, 10:30 a.m. to noon Central Time on our website, www.cutemple.org, our Facebook page, Christ Universal Temple, or our YouTube page, CU Temple. We also have Monday through Friday lessons on Facebook, on our Facebook page, where we're teaching Reverend Wells's book, Live Happy, which is a book of 365 lessons. So we read one a day throughout the year 2022. We're working with that book. And Monday through Friday, we teach a lesson, that daily lesson. So make sure that you plug in for the Live Happy lessons on Facebook. Also want to remind you that Reverend Wells has a Facebook show called Temple Talks at 7 p.m. Central Time. You just put at Rev Derek Wells or at Derek Wells, and it should pop right up for you. And we also have a consciousness building call on Thursdays at 6 p.m. We just come together, and the prayer ministry works with a prayer, a simple prayer, to make sure that weekly you're connecting with a CUT minister for prayer and coming together in a collective consciousness, because we know where two or three are gathered together. And that synergy and that collective consciousness, they're the power of the Christ within manifest in a greater way. So we want to make sure that you have the opportunities to connect and touch base. I also want to let you know that the Johnny Coleman Institute classes start next week. I'll be teaching Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. So if you're interested in that, go to the website, cutemple.org, click on the classes tab, follow the directions. You can click on my class or another class on Bible or healing or women's class or, you know, the game of life and how to play it, or, you know, a lot of different books. We want to make sure that you have the opportunity to get what you need to do what you need to do. So with that, we're going to get back. Dr. Kimbrough?
I'm right here.
All right. So I wanted to just pick up on why did you make the conscious decision to focus on making sure that our youth got it, got your lessons, the lessons of our successful history at the college level?
Well, I knew over the course of my research that there was a gap. And you've heard me say this before, Reverend McDowell. Now it has certainly changed, but for the longest, we were the only group that didn't profile as wealth creators. Here I am seated in my study, and I got my flat screen TV, and you can go back and check in any financial news network, Fox, Bloomberg, whatever, CNBC. And you might find Warren Buffett being interviewed. You might find Howard Schultz of Starbucks being interviewed. Old interview of Steve Jobs, whatever. But we don't do that. When's the last time, you know, at last count right now across the globe, there are roughly 2,355 billionaires throughout the world, across the globe. Of that, what do they say, 16 are in Africa and close to 10 are here in the United States. Well, I'm not asking you to name the 16 in Africa, but at least give me the 10 in the United States. I can ask MBA students, and they couldn't tell me. So, I wanted to close that gap. And it wasn't about, you know, how much money or how vast, how rich, how wealthy, how influent. All I wanted to do was uncover the principles and the tools that they use to acquire their wealth. And because I had the audacity to focus in on that one single track, I knew I was making a difference.
That's good. That's good. So when you were studying the wealth of Black America, how often did you run across millionaires and billionaires who work with the tool of visualization?
Oh, man, by all means, that was one of the tools that they used. Now, you go back early in the research, and there were no Black billionaires. The one who really broke the threshold was Reg Lewis. And interesting sidebar, I was just granted the opportunity to interview him. He was a Francophile. He spent a lot of time in Western Europe, and I called and I was granted the interview through his director of communications, and he said, as soon as he comes back to the States, we'll go ahead and nail it down. Well, as soon as he came back from the States, he wasn't feeling well. They ran a battery of tests, and he had an inoperable brain tumor. And so that was off the boards. But after he transitioned, his wife not only sent me a copy of his book with a lovely letter in there, a lovely letter, she said, and she flew down from New York to Atlanta, and came up on campus and handed me a copy of the book and said, my husband wanted you to have this. But the process of visualization is a tool that stands front and center, no matter who I interviewed. I mean, they practice the idea of seeing it in their mind's eye first. Seeing it, and it's not so much visualization, Reverend Mack. Mm-hmm. It is the feeling that comes with visualization. I mean, you can visualize all you want. I mean, you can go ahead and pull your journal out and you can have, you know, pictures and different drawings and the like. But it is the feeling that comes with that. I mean, you got to feel yourself in this image. You got to feel yourself standing before, you know, whoever. You got to feel yourself. What is it going to feel like when that check is placed in your hand? What is it going to feel like when you write a check for your children's education and say, here, don't send the bill for my house any longer. The balance is paid in full. It is the feeling that comes with that visualization that makes all the difference in the world.
Beautiful, beautiful. We have a caller, Dr. Kimbrough. So let me bring the caller on. All right. Stanley, are you there? Stan, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
All right, excellent. It's one thing, Dr. Kimbrough, that you mentioned a little bit earlier. I wanted to see if you can elaborate on just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of combines two points that you've made today. And it relates to the youth and also the number of Blacks who were actually millionaires. So earlier you said that 14 out of, if I'm getting this right, 14 out of 1,000 blacks own their own, black millionaires own their own business, or 14 out of 1,000 blacks own their own businesses.
Yep. So, 1991 SBA Census Bureau data.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I guess I'm wondering, is it due, or does that increase the probability that you might become a millionaire if you own your own business? Or put another way, can you be a black millionaire without owning your own business? Let's say you work somewhere.
You can. It's called the stock market. It's called Vanguard Mutual Funds.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
You got what? Between 5% and 10% who actually do that. It's not what you earn, it's what you keep. What did W. Clement Stone tell me when I had the nerve to ask him for some money to finish this? He says, "No, you finish the book and you're gonna create your own fortune." So he could see from a distance what I couldn't see up close. This guy coached me every single the way. So a couple of years later, I fly back to Chicago, and there I am, and then Mr. Stone tells me, he says, "Young man, I don't know if you realize or not, when this book is published, you're going to be in demand as a speaker." And I didn't blow him off. I'm saying to myself, "Yeah, sure, you bet, blah, blah, blah." And then he said, "You know, don't open your mouth unless for X amount of dollars," and I just go. But the other thing that he said to me, the other lesson that he said to me, he says, "You're going to start to come into some money, and if you can't save 15% of every dime that comes by your hand, the seeds of greatness aren't in you." Now, we've been taught, save 5%, save 10%, tithe, blah, blah, blah. He said, "No, 15%. I mean, you do that today, and when you look at the stock market, I mean, for the past quarter of a century, I mean, there is no financial institution, cryptocurrency included, that you could save that fast as the stock market for the last quarter of a century. I mean, 10 to 14%. But go ahead. I know that wasn't your question, but yeah. I mean, there are a number of tools right now that people use. But the bottom line is, if you want wealth creation, this is what I'm trying to say, not only in Think and Grow Rich, but What Makes a Great Great, Chapter 6 of What Makes a Great Great, which is, The Greatest Secret, You're Already Rich, and, of course, The Wealth Choice. What I'm trying to say is, you know, probably the only reason why you are where you are right now financially is because you don't love enough. Now, people give me, "What do you mean, Dr. Kimber, you don't love enough?" I mean, the fact of the matter is that whatever it is, what's the one thing that you love? What's the one thing you can pour your whole heart and soul into? What's the one thing you could do for free? I mean, why is Tiger Woods Tiger Woods? Because he loved golf enough to hit 1,000 golf balls a day. Why is Michael Jordan Michael Jordan? Because he loved basketball, loved it enough to shoot minimum 300 jump shots a day. Why is Beyonce Beyonce? Because she loves singing and dancing enough 8 to 10 hours a day, no exception practice. So, you know, you don't love enough. Well, there's got to be something that you love. We are all born with our gifts. We are all born with our gifts. And a gift will not become a talent until you use it, until you practice it. And so many people just piss on their gifts, man. Just go ahead on this, that, and that. No. And that's the parable of the talents. Had a gift, didn't use it, and never became a talent.
So that's pretty amazing stuff. One last question. You did answer my question, but you made me think of something else. You mentioned cryptocurrency in terms of investing. Now I know cryptocurrency is pretty something that's pretty new, experimental in my view. Can you just give us your quick thoughts about, you know, how you feel or what you think about cryptocurrency as an investment? I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay, well, you look at cryptocurrency right now. okay, and you look at all the different formations. You got, what, more than 1,000 different variations. You look at Dogecoin. Right now, it is just, okay, they place it on the same level with Ford Motor Company, with Kraft Foods, with one other billion-dollar business. Now, that's the level. They said that that's the net value of this particular variation. But the opposite side, what Warren Buffett is trying to tell people, doesn't have a single employee, okay, doesn't have a product, doesn't have a service, doesn't have a sales force, doesn't have any of that. And so what Warren Buffett is saying, okay, this is internet money. Until you can go ahead and check all these boxes, I will just stand at the sidelines and just watch it grow before I make a move. So to me, yeah, and I know this, folks, I got students who I coach with that. I got students who made money and who lost money. I got students who, Dr. Kimber, I'm not going into corporate America. What are you doing? I'm looking at the foreign exchange. I said, good for you. So I'm just going to be a casual, more than a casual observer. Until I see the big boys get in, I'm not busting the move. To me, that's internet money. So you do what you want to do. You earn the money. You work for the money. It's your money. Do whatever you want to do. And that's the beauty of capitalism. And I'm not talking this bastardized version of capitalism that we have in the United States. No. I'm discussing, I'm talking about the capitalism that was espoused by Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations. Because if you read that 1,000-page treaty, and what, first of all, who was Adam Smith? Number one, he was a moral philosopher. Did you hear that, Reverend Mack? He was a moral philosopher. Number two, he was anti-slavery. He was damn near an abolitionist. And then he was an economist. And he says within his book, The Wealth of Nations, the level of the capitalism that he expresses is based upon the following. Number one, I allow you to pursue your divine self-interest, and you allow me to pursue my divine self-interest, and the greater good will benefit. And he even says IH. He has the letters IH in parentheses. What is IH, invisible hand? And what is invisible hand, GMAC? It is God. It is your creator.
Yes.
And then he says, and this is the caveat that we don't talk about, but you got to talk about it because Adam Smith wrote it. He says, if one party blocks the other, all bets are off. If you allow me to pursue my divine self-interest and I block you from pursuing yours, all bets are off. And for 400 years, damn it, we've been blocked. We've been blocked for 400 years, and they're trying to block you from voting. I tell my students all the time, when we think of 1619 Project, we think of some long, 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 far away, long, 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 long time. I said, you're wrong. I said, look at your professor. I'm 71-year-old, students. And my father's only two generations. I mean, you push my children aside, there's only two generations that I saw could vote. My generation and my father's generation when I was growing up. Why? Because my grandparents died before the 1965 Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
They died before that. And what did they do for a living? My grandfather was a butler. And my grandmother was a maid. And they worked for a wealthy white family in North Carolina. How would you like to live your life? My grandfather lived, what, mid-80s, rolled his own cigarettes, and never got an opportunity to vote. And was taxed. And this country was founded upon no taxation without representation.
Right.
Well,
right.
If you did it over here on this side of the fence, well, damn it, why won't you do it over here? That's Adam Smith. So what you have right now with this redlining, what you have with these subprime loans, what you have, what they're doing with these kids in college, with this high-ass interest rate. These kids forget the principal. They can't even pay the interest.
Right.
I didn't know the federal government was such an entrepreneur.
I literally just had that conversation with my daughter. She graduated from Illinois State, just in December. And it's just,
congratulations.
I was just having a conversation about
normal and normal. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, I was just having that conversation with her. We do have a caller, and we have about 9 minutes left, so I need to let this caller come in. Let me see here. This Stan, another a different Stan?
Yeah, no, this yes, a different Stan. Yes, sir.
How you doing there, Stan? Hey, do you have a question for Dr. Kimbrough?
Reverend G. Mac and Dr. Hey Kimbrough, I have all of your books. I've been reading them for decades, years.
Wow, wow.
Yeah, I know. The other day, and I picked up one. I said, "Yeah, this is just what I need." A question for you is, and you've already answered it, about loving what you do and coming in alignment for gift. But I wanted to ask you, what kind of principle or procedures, or how do you orchestrate that optimal state of mind to be as creative? What was a typical day like for you when you were creating this great work? And it
I don't jump in the world until I get some P&D on board, prayer and devotion. I do the same thing. Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, when they started the day, as soon as they woke up, they got centered. In other words, they remembered the Sabbath. Now, the Sabbath is different for different people. For Christians, for me, it's a Sunday. For Jews, it's Saturday. For Muslims, it's Friday. If we travel the globe, I imagine that you could find some group that would say their Sabbath is Tuesday, Wednesday. Well, what is the Sabbath? Well, the Sabbath is every day. Someone says, remember the Sabbath. What is he telling you? Take time out. Take time every day to recalibrate, to recenter, to refocus, to retool, to reengineer, to realign. David, my rod and thy staff, they comfort me. He was always in alignment because there's so much nonsense out there. So I got painters here in the house, and I'm about to move my computer. I move my computer. My computer gets a virus. I got to take it back and take it to Geek Squad, and what will they do? They say, well, I hope you back up your files because we're going to restore your computer to its original default. So what happens when we get a mental virus? And what is a mental virus? I can't do this. I can't do that. What is a mental virus? Oh, I don't have the resources. I don't have the capabilities. What is a mental virus? Oh, man, I'm just looking for help. Well, you got to help. All you got to do is raise your eyes. Well, we got to be restored to our original default. And what is our original default? It's love. It's love. There is a power that loves you, that knows every hair on your head, that loves you. Love, in terms of wealth, love is the bottom line. That's all I've been trying to say. Love, not money. Love is the bottom line. You're an entrepreneur and you love your customers, you're getting more customers. You're a corporate climber and you love your coworkers, you're going to make manager, you're going to make senior level VP in no time. So focus in. I mean, I can't say it anymore. People say to me, man, my students say to me, man, you're the only person I know that writes books on money. Your books ain't got nothing to do with money. I said, I know you're right. My books are not about cash. My books are about courage. It takes courage to chase your dream. It takes courage to find a new set of friends because the folks you hang around with disempower you. It takes courage to believe in yourself when no one else will. No, they're not hardly about cash. So read it and then take action on what you read. Because these are your best and your brightest. And I don't know any place else where it's done. I can go to Amazon right now. I can go to any Barnes & Noble, blah, 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 and go over to the black book section. How many business books do you see over there? We don't even discuss it. And we don't even look at our leaders. I mean, in 1897, your most prolific scholar, W.B. Du Bois, wrote both Du Bois and Booker T. Washington wrote books 10 years apart and used the exact same title, The Negro in Business. Du Bois' book in 1897, The Negro in Business. 10 years later, Booker T. Washington, and I got a copy of it. I'm looking at the book right now, 1907, The Negro in Business.
Yes.
And then there's a gap. And then there's a gap. I'm not knocking anybody. You write whatever you want to write on. But this is a crucial area, man. What are they talking about? If King would have lived 1 year longer, man, he would have focused on economic rights. And we're still doing that. We're still doing that. And I tell you right there in the Wealth Choice, I mean, you read Du Bois' book, The Negro in Business, and you read the first 30 pages, and what does he tell you, G-Mac? Two profound statements. Number one, the man or woman who won't control his or her finances won't control anything else. You don't care about the money in your pocket. You don't care about your community. You don't care about nothing. And then number two, nothing positive will ever occur in a community that fails to circulate its dollars. Now, he wrote that in 1897. Why are we still dealing with that today? Mm-hmm. And you solved that problem in 1921. Don't you know that the average dollar in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, those 3,600 square blocks, in 1921, the average dollar circulated in that community 6 months to a year before it left.
Yeah.
You did it one time, you can do it again.
Mm-hmm.
That's powerful. But it's not going to happen until you discuss it.
Yes, yes.
And what does Jesus always say? Jesus always taught. And what did he say? Don't deny your problems. Transcend them. In other words, you don't take, you don't take darkness to light. You take light to darkness. You don't take poverty to wealth. You take wealth to poverty. You're already wealthy. Why do you do no? Everybody talking about, well, I got to change. And no, the last thing you need to do is change. You don't need to change.
Mm. Yeah. This is the conversation that we need to have on CNN.
Yep.
I think it's the conversation that we need to demand. I'm going to say thanks, yeah. Stan, for the call, because we only have a minute and a half left,
and
so I'm going to have to let you go.
I got painters here that...
Yeah, so he has to do what he needs to do. So we have to wrap up this call. We have Marcellus. I know you had been waiting, but we didn't have time to get you. I appreciate the call in. I had to one day get Dr. Kimbrough back so we can make sure we deal with these calls, because he has a couple of people that are waiting, yep. And we've just run out of time. So Dr. Kimbrough, I think that this is part of a larger conversation, and yeah. Christ Universal Temple has always been a friend for that conversation, and we want to be a friend for that conversation, because, Black wealth and the building of Black success and wealth makes a difference. And, our founder, your friend, the Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman, was adamant about making sure that people understood that God was the source of their supply. So thank you so much for everything that you do.
I am honored, my brother. Call anytime.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to wrap up and let you get back to, I'm going to close the show out. I'm going to let you get back to taking care of what you need to take care of your home for these last 30 seconds.
Will do.
So God bless you. And,
and
I'll
God
be in touch.
God bless you too, my man.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So callers, yet again, for those who didn't get an opportunity to ask your questions, we'll make sure we get him back so you can ask the questions that you need to ask. I do want to let you know that next week I'm bringing the Reverend Lola right back. We're going to have another conversation about transformation, because we were rolling downhill. So as long as people are willing to come in and have these conversations, I want to have it. We'll be with you next week with Truth Transforms. God bless.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Suzanne Giesman, and if you've ever wondered about life after death or if it's possible to connect with a higher consciousness, I invite you to join me for my podcast, Messages of Hope. It's my mission to share with you that our loved ones who have passed are always with us, and we are so very loved. I want to teach you how to live a consciously connected and divinely guided life. Listen here on the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.